Welcome to Keith Knight. Don't Tread on Anyone. This is an article from Andrew Sullivan titled, When All the Media Narratives Collapse, in case after case, the United States mainstream media just keeps getting it wrong. The news is a perilous business. It's perilous because the first draft of history is almost always somewhat wrong and needs a second draft and a third, and so on over time until the historian can investigate with more perspective and calm. The job of journalists is to do the best they can day by day and respond swiftly when they screw up, correct the record, and move forward. I've learned this the hard way, not least in the combination of credulousness and trauma I harbored in the wake of 9/11. But when the sources of news keep getting things wrong, and all the errors lie in the exact same direction, and they are reluctant to acknowledge error, we have a problem. If you look back at the last few years, the record of errors, small and large, about major stories is hard to deny. It's as if the more Donald Trump accused the mainstream media of being fake news, the more assiduously they tried to prove him right. And these mass deceptions have consequences. We are seeing this now in the Rittenhouse case, a gruesome story of a reckless teen with a rifle in the wake of the police shootings of Jacob Blake in Kenosha. The impression many got from much of the media was that a far-right vigilante in the middle of race riots had gone looking for trouble, far from home, and injured one man and killed two in a shooting spree. Here's the New York Times on August 26th, the morning after the killings. The authorities were investigating whether the white teenager who was arrested was part of a vigilante group. His social media accounts appeared to show an intense affinity for guns, law enforcement, and President Trump. Rittenhouse's races specified the race of the men he killed and injured were not. They were also white. Almost immediately, the complicated facts became unimportant. The far right viewed Rittenhouse as a hero, which he surely wasn't. He had no business being there with an AR-15. What business is it of yours to tell Rittenhouse what his business is? If some people are burning and rioting and looting the property of innocent people, anyone has the right to forcibly stop them. But why is it your business to tell other people what their business is? If I see one person raping another, but I don't know them, is it my business? So the police shouldn't ever get involved in anything unless they themselves are the ones being aggressed against, because it's not really their business. So governments shouldn't go around, you know, invading countries like Afghanistan or Iraq unless that person, that exact soldier, has been hurt by someone in Iraq or Afghanistan. Of course, this is just one of those unthinking lines that even smart people like Sullivan fall victim to. The MSM and far left viewed him as a villain, appalled that he was being elevated, in Jamal Bowie's words, as a symbol of self-defense. Another New York Times article painting Rittenhouse as a MAGA fanatic did note at the bottom of the page, supporters of Mr. Rittenhouse said he was being attacked by the mob and acted in legitimate self-defense, so they did have a caveat. But notice how the narrative embedded in a deeper one that the Blake shooting was just as clear-cut as the Floyd murder, that thousands of black men were being gunned down by cops every year, and that white supremacy was rampant in every cranny of America, effectively excluded the possibility that Rittenhouse was a naive, dangerous fool in the midst of an indefensible mayhem who, in the end, shot assailants in self-defense. And so, when this week one of Rittenhouse's pursuers, Gage Krausgrotz, admitted on the stand that Rittenhouse shot him, only after Gage pointed his pistol directly at Rittenhouse's head a few feet away, it came as a shock. Money quote from the defense lawyer. It wasn't until you pointed your gun at him, advanced on him with your gun and your hands down, pointed at him, that he fired, right? To which Grosskrautz answered, correct. Here's how the New York Times first described this a year ago on August 26th. Video footage from the scene of the shooting appears to show Mr. Rittenhouse running and then firing his gun, striking a man in the head. He then flees and is chased by bystanders before tripping, falling onto the ground, and shooting another man. A day later, in another New York Times piece, which I relied on at the time, here's the account of video footage they embedded. As Mr. Rittenhouse is running, he trips and falls to the ground. He fires 4 shots as 3 people rush towards him. One person appears to be hit in the chest and falls to the ground. Another, who is carrying a handgun, is hit in the arm and runs away. Any sense of self-defense there? And when you watch the full version of the same video on YouTube, you see that, for some reason, the New York Times cut off the key moment showing Rittenhouse's self-defense, the moment that proved so critical in court. I haven't watched the whole trial, but if you watch for any length of time, you realize you've been led to believe a media narrative that was way off. Independent journalists last year, like Jesse Singel, were more clear-eyed. Because of that narrative whiplash, we may have more rioting and violence if he's acquitted. The judge is already being targeted. I'm not defending Rittenhouse. And I understand news gathering is fallible, but there's a media pattern here, and it reaches far wider than Rittenhouse. We found this week, for example, that a key figure in the emergence of the Steele dossier, Igor Danchenko, had been indicted for lying to the FBI. He's also charged with asking a Clinton crony, Charles Dolan Jr., any thought, rumor, allegation. I am working on a related project against Trump. The evidence from another key source for the dossier, Sergey Milian, touted across all media, including the Washington Post, has also been exposed as potentially fake. What has the Post done? As their own indispensable, Eric Wemple notes, instead of a clear retraction, the Post has just added editor's notes to previous stories, removed sections and a video, and altered headlines retroactively. This is a bizarre way of correcting the record. No such case comes immediately or specifically to mind, at least no historical case that stirred lasting controversy, said W. Joseph Campbell, a professor and journalism historian at American University. This doesn't mean that Trump wasn't eager for Russian help, but Trump was right in the end about the dodgy dossier. He was right about the duped FBI's original overreach, and the mass media, Rachel Maddow chief among them, were wrong. And yet the dossier dominated the headlines for 3 years, and the corrections have a fraction of the audience of the errors. Maddow gets promoted, and the man who first published it, Ben Smith, was made media columnist for the New York Times. Think of the other narratives the mainstream media pushed in recent years that have collapsed. They viciously defamed the Covington boys. They authoritatively told us that bounties had been placed on U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan by Putin, and Trump's denials only made them more certain. They told us that the lab leak theory of COVID was a conspiracy theory with no evidence behind it at all. The New York Times actually had the story of the lab leak theory by Donald McNeil, killed it, and then fired McNeil, their best COVID reporter, after some schoolgirls complained he wasn't woke. Wrong, wrong, wrong. The MSM took the ludicrous story of Jesse Smollett seriously because it fit their nutty white supremacy narrative. They told us that a woman was brutally gang-raped at UVA, invented, that the Pulse mass shooting was driven by homophobia, untrue, and that the Atlanta spa shooter was motivated by anti-Asian bias. No known evidence for that at all. For good measure, they followed up with the story after story about white supremacists targeting Asian Americans in a new wave of hate, even as the assaults were disproportionately by African Americans and the mentally ill. As Greenwald noted, the New York Times published an emotionally gut-wrenching but complete fiction that never had any evidence that Officer Sicknick's skull was savagely bashed in with a fire extinguisher by a pro-Trump mob until he died. The media told us that an alleged transgender exposure in the Wee Spa in Los Angeles was an anti-trans hoax, also untrue. They told us that the emails recovered on Hunter Biden's laptop were Russian disinformation. They did this just before an election and used that claim to stymie the story on social media. But they were not Russian disinformation. They were a valid, if minor, news story the media consciously kept from its audience for partisan purposes. More recently, the MSM were telling us for months that inflation is a phantasm. We were told that the 2021 inflation scare is another series of false alarms going back several decades. We were assured that the numbers, at least for now, are on the side of those expecting the trend to subdue and then stabilize at lower levels. Any concern was fear-mongering politics. And now we wake up to the highest inflation in 30 years, counterbalancing wage increases. Still, they tell us all will be well. We were told that vaccines would end the COVID pandemic, but they merely altered COVID to a manageable disease that you could still contract while vaccinated. They told us that the migrant surge at the border was just seasonal, and nothing out of the ordinary, even as 1.7 million migrants were illegally trying to get into the country in the last year. We were told that sending migrants back to their home countries was wicked and unconscionable Trump tactic, even as the Biden administration swiftly copied it with Haitian immigrants. Too much success. The cruelty is the point, eh? We were, and still are, being told by most of the media that critical race theory isn't in high schools at all. Meanwhile, a tsunami of evidence is out there showing that it absolutely is in every subject and every class as the central philosophy behind many states' educational policies. We all get things wrong. What makes this more worrying is simply that all these false narratives just happen to favor the interests of the left and the Democratic Party. And corrections, when they occur, take up a fraction of the space of the original falsehood. They are not randos tweeting false rumors. They are the established press. At some point, you wonder, what narrative are they pushing now that is also bullshit? One comes to mind, the assurance that the insane amount of debt we have incurred this century is absolutely nothing to be concerned about because interest rates are super low and borrowing more and more now is a no-brainer. But when inflation spikes set off a potential spiral in wages to catch up, will interest rates stay so quiescent? And if interest rates go up, how will we service the debt so easily? Sullivan finishes the article saying, I still rely on much of the MSM for so much. I still read the New York Times first thing in the morning. I don't want to feel as if everything I read is basically tilted through wish fulfillment, narrative proving, and ideology. But with this kind of record, how can I not? Quick excerpt from Knowledge, Reality, and Value by Michael Humer, a mostly common sense guide to philosophy. In discussing how the media tends to operate, he says, I've noticed that it falls into three main categories. First, ideological propaganda. If you learn about an issue from a partisan source, for instance, you'll read about gun control on a gun control advocacy website, or you'll hear the day's news from a conservative radio show. You will get pretty much 100% propaganda. Facts will be exaggerated, cherry-picked, deceptively phrased, or otherwise misleading. Normally, you will have no way of guessing the specific way in which the information is deceptive, making the information essentially worthless for drawing inferences. Second, sensationalism. Mainstream news sources make money by getting as many people as possible to watch their shows, read their articles, and so on. To do that, they try to make everything sound as scary, exciting, outrageous, or otherwise dramatic as possible. Third, laziness. Most people who write for public consumption are lazy and lack expertise about the things they write about. If a story has some technical aspect, example science news, journalists probably won't understand it, and they may get basic facts backwards. Also, they often just talk to one or a few sources and print whatever those sources say, even if the sources have obvious biases. Thank you for watching Keith Knight, Don't Tread on Anyone, and the Libertarian Institute.
I've had the story for 3 years. I've had this interview with Virginia Roberts. We would not put it on the air. First of all, I was told, who's Jeffrey Epstein? No one knows who that is. This is a stupid story. Then the palace found out that we had her whole allegations about Prince Andrew and threatened us a million different ways. We were so afraid we wouldn't be able to interview Kate and Will that quashed the story. And then Alan Dershowitz was also implicated in because of the planes. She told me everything. She had pictures. She had everything. She was in hiding for 12 years. We convinced her to come out. We convinced her to talk to us. It was unbelievable what we had. Clinton. We had everything. I tried for 3 years to get it on, to no avail, and now it's all coming out, and it's like these new revelations, and I freaking had all of it. I'm so pissed right now. Like, every day I get more and more pissed, because I'm just like, oh my God, what we had was unreal. Other women backing it up. Hey, yep. Brad Edwards, the attorney, 3 years ago saying, there will come a day when we will realize Jeffrey Epstein was the most prolific pedophile this country has ever known. And I had it all 3 years ago.